Wow. Okay. So you guys really went all out this time. Exponential functions and logarithms.
Yeah.
You're really diving deep into how these things work, how they're connected, and even how to like reshape them with transformations. Well, you came to the right place. Expert speaker and I, we've been poring over your notes and we're ready to break it all down.
You know, it's exciting because you're about to tap into understanding how things change in the world. We're talking growth, we're talking decay, and those patterns we see everywhere, from like the smallest bacteria, you know, all the way up to the vastness of the universe.
So, okay, before we get into the like really complicated stuff, why are these functions so important? What makes them different from just like adding or multiplying?
Ah, that's the question. It all comes down to how the rate of change, like itself, changes. So picture this. You're watching a snowball roll down a hill, right? It starts small, but as it gathers more snow, it grows faster and faster and faster. That's the magic of exponential functions. The bigger they get, the faster they grow.
Oh, okay. So it's not just a steady increase. It's like this accelerating growth, right? So I can see how that would be useful for modeling things that explode in size, like a viral video spreading online.
Yeah. Or think about compound interest, where your money grows faster because you're earning interest on your interest. Exponential functions are the perfect tool to model these kinds of phenomena.
That makes sense. But what about logarithms? Where do they fit into all of this?
Well, imagine you're trying to figure out how long it takes for that snowball to reach the size of a car. You know how fast it's growing, but how do you work backward to find the time? That's where logarithms come in. They're like the inverse, like the undo button for exponential functions.
Ooh, okay. I'm starting to get the connection here. So if exponential functions are like hitting the fast forward button on growth, logarithms are like rewinding to see how we got there.
You got it. They let us solve for those tricky exponents and understand the time scales involved in these exponential processes.
All right, so let's get down to the basics here. We've been throwing around exponential function, but what do they actually look like?
In their most basic form, they're written as y equals b to the power of x, where b is the base and x is the exponent. That base tells us how fast the function is growing or shrinking.
Okay. And you mentioned that the base tells us if something is growing or shrinking. How does that work?
Imagine it this way. If that base is bigger than one, we've got exponential growth. It's like our snowball getting bigger and bigger and bigger over time. But if the base is between 0 and 1, that's when we have exponential decay. Think of a cup of coffee cooling down. It loses heat quickly at first, then slows down as it gets closer to room temperature.
Okay, so a bigger base means faster growth, and a smaller base means it's shrinking. What about those x's, those exponents?
Ah, that's where it gets really interesting. Unlike linear functions, where the exponent is always one, in exponential functions, the exponent is the variable. This is what gives them that powerful accelerating or decelerating behavior.
So, to use the snowball analogy again, the bigger the exponent, the faster and bigger that snowball grows as it rolls down the hill.
Exactly. And with exponential decay, a bigger exponent would mean that coffee cools down even faster.
Okay. We've got these exponential functions, but how can we analyze them? Like, really see how they behave?
One way is to look at their finite differences, which basically tells us how much the function changes over equal intervals. Now, these differences are constant in linear functions, but in exponential functions, they either increase or decrease proportionally to the function itself, which kind of hints at that accelerating or decelerating nature we talked about.
So it's like the bigger the difference, the steeper that curve is going to be on the graph. That makes sense. But let's get back to logarithms. You said they're the inverse of exponential functions. What do they really mean in practice?
So imagine plugging a number into an exponential function. You get an output, right? If you take that output and plug it into the matching logarithmic function, you get the original number back.
Whoa, so it's like a two-way street. You can go from input to output with the exponential function and then back again with logarithm.
Exactly. And it's this inverse relationship that makes them so powerful for solving equations and understanding those exponential processes.
My brain's starting to bend a little, but I think I'm following. Can you give me an example of what a logarithmic function actually looks like?
Of course, they're written as y equals log base b of x. This is basically asking, what exponent do we need to raise the base b to get x?
All right, so it's like we're solving for the missing exponent. Can we try an example just to see how this works?
Sure, let's take log base 2 of 8. This is asking what power of 2 gives us 8? The answer is 3 because 2 cubed equals 8.
Okay, I think I see the pattern here. So in this example, the base is 2, the output we're trying to get is 8, and the logarithm, which is 3, is the exponent that connects them.
Exactly. And this exponent-based answer relationship is key to understanding how logarithms work.
This is starting to click now. So we've got these two powerful functions, exponentials and logarithms, that are like two sides of the same coin. They work together to describe these patterns of growth and decay we see all around us. But I'm curious, are there any limitations to using these models?
That's a great question, and one that deserves its own deep dive. While these functions are incredibly powerful, they aren't always perfect representations of real-world phenomena. Sometimes growth or decay might slow down or speed up in ways that don't fit a perfect exponential curve.
Right, so it's important to remember that models are just that, models. They're simplifications of reality and don't always capture every nuance.
Exactly. But even with those limitations, exponential and logarithmic functions give us a really powerful framework for understanding and predicting how things change over time.
This is all so fascinating. So we've explored why these functions are important and how they're connected. Now I want to really dig deep into their specific properties.
Absolutely. Let's start by comparing their domains and ranges. This tells us what values the input and output can take. Exponential functions can take any real number as input, but their output is always going to be positive.
Why is that? Why can't the output be negative?
Well, think about the graph of an exponential function. It either shoots up towards infinity or comes down towards zero, but it never actually crosses that zero line. That's because no matter how many times you multiply a positive base by itself, you'll never get a negative number.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. So what about logarithms? What are their domain and range?
Logarithmic functions, they flip this. Their input has to be positive, but their output can be any real number.
Why is the input restricted to positive numbers? Like, what happens if we try to take the logarithm of a negative number?
Great question. Think about what a logarithm is asking. It's saying, what exponent do I need to raise the base to in order to get this number? But you can't raise a positive base to any power and get a negative result.
Oh, okay. So it's like a mathematical rule. Logarithms of negative numbers are undefined. It's like trying to divide by zero. It just doesn't work.
Precisely. And these restrictions on the input and output are reflected in the graphs of these functions, specifically through their asymptotes.
Isomptotes. Remind me what those are again.
So an asymptote is a line that a graph approaches but never actually reaches. Exponential functions have a horizontal asymptote at y equals zero, meaning they get closer and closer to zero but never actually cross it. That's a visual representation of the fact that the output can never be negative.
So it's like that zero line is a boundary that the exponential function just can't cross. What about logarithms? Do they have asymptotes too?
They do. Logarithmic functions have a vertical asymptote at x equals zero, meaning they get closer and closer to the y-axis as the input gets smaller and smaller, but never touch it. This reflects that you can't take the logarithm of zero or a negative number.
So the asymptotes are like visual reminders of those domain and range restrictions we were just talking about. They show us the boundaries of what's possible with these functions.
Exactly. And understanding these limitations is key to using them effectively to model real-world phenomena.
This is starting to make so much sense. I'm really starting to get how these functions work and why they're so important. What else can we learn by looking at their graphs?
Well, we can also look at their intercepts. These are the points where the graph crosses the x and y-axis. The exponential function, it crosses the y-axis at the point 0, 1, while the logarithmic function crosses the x-axis at the point 1, 0.
Interesting. So their intercepts are swapped. I wonder if that has to do with their inverse relationship.
You're right. That's another example of how their inverse relationship shows up in their graphical features.
This is so cool. I love how everything is connected. So we've explored the domain, range, asymptotes, and intercepts of these functions. What else can we learn about their behavior?
Well, just like with other functions, we can manipulate them with transformations. You know, we can stretch them, compress them, flip them, and move them around on the graph.
Oh, yeah, transformations. I remember those from algebra. We could do all of that with exponential and logarithmic functions, too.
Absolutely. And understanding how these transformations work is key to understanding how the equations and graphs of these functions are related.
Okay, I'm ready to get my hands dirty with some transformations. Where do we start?
Let's look at an example from your notes. Here we have the function g of x equals negative 2 log base 2 of x minus 5 plus 2. Can you spot any transformations in that equation?
Okay, let me see. That negative 2 in front of the logarithm, is that a vertical stretch?
Yeah, That means the graph is stretched vertically by a factor of 2. And because it's negative, it's also reflected across the x-axis. What about that, x minus 5, inside the logarithm?
I think that shifts the graph horizontally, right?
Exactly. It shifts the graph 5 units to the right. And lastly, that plus 2 at the end, what does that do?
That shifts the graph vertically too, right? I think it moves it up by 2 units.
You got it. So we've got a vertical stretch by a factor of 2, a reflection across the x-axis, a horizontal shift 5 units to the right, and a vertical shift 2 units up, all packed into one equation.
Wow, that's a lot going on. I'm starting to see how these transformations can really, like, reshape the graph. But I'm curious, how do these horizontal and vertical shifts affect the asymptotes we were talking about?
That's a great question. So vertical shifts, they don't affect the asymptotes at all. They just move the whole graph up or down. But those horizontal shifts, those directly impact the vertical asymptote of logarithmic functions.
So in this example, since we're shifting the graph 5 units to the right, does that mean the vertical asymptote moves to x equals 5?
Yes. Instead of being at x equals 0, that vertical asymptote now sits at x equals 5 because the entire graph has been shifted over.
All right, that makes sense. Can we try another example just to make sure I'm getting this?
Of course. How about this one? H of x equals 3 log base 4 of 2 times the quantity x plus 6 minus 4. What transformations are you seeing in that equation?
Okay, let's see. We've got a 3 in front, so that's a vertical stretch by a factor of 3. And I think that 2 inside the parentheses is a horizontal compression, right? Like, it squishes the graph horizontally.
Absolutely. And because it's a 2 inside the parentheses, it's a compression by a factor of 12. Now, what about that x plus 6 inside the logarithm?
That would shift the graph horizontally again, but this time to the left by 6 units, right? And that minus 4 at the end is a vertical shift down by 4 units.
You're on a roll. You've identified all the transformations correctly.
This is starting to feel like a superpower. I can just look at an equation and picture how it's going to, like, reshape the graph. But I got to admit, I'm still wrapping my head around how these transformations all work together to, like, sculpt the function's behavior. It's like having a set of tools to fine-tune how quickly something grows or decays.
That's a great way to think about it. And just like a sculptor uses different tools to shape their creation, we can use transformations to shape the behavior of these functions to match those real-world phenomena we're trying to model.
This is so fascinating. I'm excited to explore even more ways to manipulate these functions and see what we can learn.
Well, you're in luck. There's another set of powerful tools for manipulating logarithms. They're called the logarithmic laws.
Logarithmic laws. What are those?
Think of them as shortcuts that let us manipulate logarithmic expressions really easily. And they're directly connected to the exponent laws you've already learned.
Ooh, I love shortcuts.
Ah.
So what are these logarithmic laws and how they work?
There are 3 main laws: the power law, the product law, and the quotient law. Let's start with the power law. It says that log base b of x to the nth power equals n times log base b of x. So we can bring that exponent n down in front of the logarithm.
Hold on. So we can move that exponent down and multiply it by the logarithm. Why does that work?
Think about it. In the exponent world, raising a power to another power is like multiplying the exponents. In the logarithm world, we're doing the inverse, so we bring that exponent down as a multiplier.
Ah, so it's like we're undoing the exponentiation by bringing that power down in front. Okay, I can see how that could be really helpful for simplifying things. What about the other laws?
Next up, the product law. Log base b of m times n equals log base b of m plus log base b of n. This means the logarithm of a product is the sum of the logarithms of each individual factor.
Wait, so we could break down the logarithm of a multiplication problem into the sum of 2 separate logarithms. That seems super useful.
It is, and it mirrors that exponent rule where multiplying powers with the same base means we add their exponents.
Okay, I'm starting to see the connection between these laws and the exponent rules. What about the last one?
All right, the quotient law. Log base b of m divided by n equals log base b of m minus log base b of n. The logarithm of a quotient is the difference of the logarithms of the numerator and denominator.
So if we have a division problem inside the logarithm, we can break it down into the difference of 2 separate logarithms. And I bet this mirrors that exponent rule for dividing powers with the same base, right?
Exactly. These laws are all about making logarithms easier to work with by connecting them back to those familiar rules of exponents.
This is all starting to feel like a toolkit for, like, tackling logarithms. But I'm still a little fuzzy on how we actually use these laws in practice.
Let's look at some examples from your notes. Do you remember that messy logarithmic expression in L5 example 1?
Oh, right. I remember that one.
By applying the power and quotient laws, we can break it down into smaller, more manageable pieces.
Right, it seems so complicated at first, but by using those laws, we were able to simplify it step by step.
Exactly. And in L5 example 2, we saw how the product law can help us evaluate logarithms without a calculator by breaking them down into simpler pieces.
I remember that too. It was like magic, taking a complicated logarithm and turning it into something we could just like solve easily in our heads. What about those examples where we had to like expand or condense those logarithmic expressions?
Ah, those are great examples of how these laws can be used to manipulate expressions to suit our needs. In L5 example 3, we use the product and power laws to expand a single logarithm into a sum of simpler logarithms.
Right, and in L5 example 4, we did the opposite. We used the quotient and power laws to condense a sum of logarithms into a single logarithm. It's like we have these tools that let us just switch back and forth between different forms of the expression.
Exactly. The power of these laws is in their flexibility. They give us the ability to manipulate logarithmic expressions in ways that make them easier to work with.
This is all starting to click now. I'm starting to see how these laws are like the keys to unlocking the power of logarithms.
And now that you have those tools at your disposal, you're ready to tackle the real challenge: solving equations involving exponential and logarithmic functions.
Ooh, now things are getting interesting. I'm ready to put all this knowledge to the test and see what I can solve.
I knew you'd be up for the challenge. Let's start by tackling some exponential
That's
equations.
good to me. Bring it on.
So sometimes we can solve those exponential equations by like finding equivalent bases. For example, let's take the equation 7 to the power of 2x plus 1 equals 729. We can actually rewrite 729 as 7 cubed.
Oh, okay. So we're trying to make both sides of the equation have that same base.
Exactly. And once those bases are the same, we can just equate the exponents and solve for x. Like we're stripping away the base and just focusing on those
Does it
powers.
make sense? It's like we're zooming in on the part of the equation that really matters. But what if we can't like easily find equivalent bases? What happens then?
That's when logarithms come in handy. They're like our secret weapon for dealing with those tricky exponents.
Okay, so how do we actually use logarithms to solve exponential equations when we can't find those matching bases?
Well, we can take the logarithm of both sides of the equation, which lets us bring those exponents down. Remember that power law we were talking about
Right,
earlier?
we're basically using logarithms to like undo the exponentiation and get those variables out of the exponent. I'm starting to see just how powerful these logarithms can be.
They're super useful. Examples 1 and 2 from L6 in your notes actually walk through this technique step by step, showing you exactly how to use it.
I'm going to have to revisit those examples and practice this technique. It seems like a total game changer for solving exponential equations. But you mentioned something earlier about extraneous roots. What are those, and why do we need to watch out for them?
Ah, great question. Sometimes when we solve equations, we end up with solutions that don't actually work when we plug them back into the original equation. We call those extraneous roots. They can show up when we're working with logarithms because of those domain restrictions we talked about.
Right, because we can't take the logarithm of a negative number or zero. We have to make sure our solutions don't lead us down that path.
Exactly. It's always a good idea to just double-check those solutions, plug them back into the original equation, and make sure they actually work.
That's a really good tip. I'm definitely going to make a habit of checking my solutions from now on. So we've tackled exponential equations. What about logarithmic equations? How do we approach those?
Well, the key here is to use the fact that if the logarithms of two expressions were equal, then the expressions themselves got to be equal. That lets us get rid of those logarithms and work directly with the stuff inside.
Okay, so we can basically cancel out the logarithms if they have the same base. That seems pretty straightforward.
It is. And examples 1a and 1b from L7 in your notes show exactly how we can use this property, along with those logarithmic laws, to solve logarithmic equations step by step.
I remember those examples, and some of them we were able to isolate the logarithm and then convert it to exponential form to solve for the variable.
Exactly. And sometimes, like in examples 1c and 1d from L7, might need to get a little creative. Maybe use some factoring or combine a couple of logarithmic terms just to get that equation into a form we can solve.
It's like we're building up our problem-solving toolkit with each new technique, but I gotta admit, I'm still a little intimidated by these equations. It's a lot to keep track of.
I get it. It takes practice, but as you work through more examples and get comfortable with the properties and laws, it'll become more intuitive.
Speaking of practice, can we go back to that compound interest example you mentioned? I'm really curious about how we can use these concepts to actually analyze real-world financial situations.
Of course. Compound interest is a classic example of exponential growth, and it's modeled by the formula A equals P times 1 plus R over N to the power of NT.
Okay, let's break that down. So A is the final amount of money you have. P is the principal. That's the initial investment. R is the interest rate and is the number of times that interest is compounded per year. And T is the time in years. It's like a recipe for growing money.
Exactly. And what's really cool is that the exponent in this formula represents how many times that interest is actually calculated and added to the principal over that investment period. This highlights how that growth accelerates as that interest is compounded more and more frequently.
So if we wanted to know, how long it would take for an investment to double, we would need to solve for T, right?
You got it. And since T is up in the exponent, we can use those trusty logarithms to isolate it and figure out how long it takes to reach that desired amount. Example 4 from L6 in your notes actually goes through a problem just like that, showing you how to apply logarithms to a practical financial situation.
That's so cool. It's amazing how these seemingly abstract mathematical concepts have such practical applications in the real world.
It is. And it's not just finance. Think about radioactive decay. That's modeled by exponential decay functions. And scientists actually use logarithms to figure out the half-life of those radioactive substances, which is the time it takes for half of that substance to decay.
Oh, wow. So these functions are like tools that help us understand how things change over time, whether it's money growing in a bank account or radioactive material decaying. It's fascinating to see how math can help us model and even predict these processes.
Exactly. And the more we explore these functions, the more connections we find to the world around us. They're truly fundamental to understanding how things work.
I'm starting to see these functions everywhere now. It's like I've unlocked a whole new level of understanding about the patterns and processes happening all around me.
That's the beauty of learning about these functions. They give you a new lens through which to view the world. You start to see those exponential and logarithmic relationships everywhere.
I'm already thinking about all the different ways I can apply these concepts in my own life. But before we get too carried away, let's just take a step back and, appreciate the beauty of these functions themselves.
I love that. Sometimes we get so caught up in the technical details that we forget to just admire how elegant and powerful the math really is.
Yeah. There's something so beautiful about the way these exponential and logarithmic functions mirror each other and their unique characteristics and how they can describe those fundamental processes of growth and decay.
It's a testament to just how powerful math can be to capture those essential natural phenomena. It's like we're decoding the language of the universe.
And speaking of beauty, let's go back to their graphs for a sec. We've talked about them in terms of their properties, but I'm curious to explore what their shapes can tell us about, like growth and decay.
So the shape of an exponential growth function is like a rocket taking off. It curves upwards, and that reflects the accelerating nature of that growth. And the steeper that curve, the faster the growth rate.
So a really steep exponential curve means things are growing super fast,
Yeah.
while a flatter curve means that growth is slower and more gradual.
Exactly. And with exponential decay, that graph curves downwards, getting closer and closer to that horizontal asymptote, but never quite reaching it. It's like a ball slowing down as it rolls to a stop.
So with decay, the shape of the curve shows how things slow down as they approach zero, but they never actually get there. It's like a gradual fading away.
That's a great way to visualize it. And that logarithmic function, true to its inverse nature, has a graph that looks like a reflection of the exponential function. It rises sharply at first and then levels off as that input increases.
It's like that logarithmic function is trying to catch up to the exponential function, but it never quite manages to.
That's a fantastic analogy. And the shapes of these graphs are super important for understanding those real-world phenomena.
Yeah. Like in finance, the shape of that exponential growth curve helps us visualize how compound interest can really lead to significant wealth accumulation over time. It highlights the power of starting early and letting your investments grow.
Exactly. And in science, the shape of that exponential decay curve helps explain why radioactive contamination can linger for such a long time, even as the amount of radioactive material decreases. It's a visual reminder that those decay processes can be slow and gradual, especially as they approach zero.
These graphs are really powerful tools. For visualizing and understanding these concepts, I'm starting to see them in a whole new light.
And as you continue exploring these fascinating functions, remember to keep those visual representations in mind. they can give you some really valuable insights into how those functions behave and their real-world applications.
This deep dive has been incredible. We've gone from defining exponential and logarithmic functions to understanding their properties, applying those transformations, and even solving equations involving them. I feel like I have a much more solid foundation now to really explore these functions further.
You've done a fantastic job grasping these concepts. And remember, this is just the beginning of your journey. There's still so much more to discover.
I'm already excited to see what else I can learn about these functions and how I can apply them to different areas of my life. But I'm curious, what advice would you give to someone who wants to keep exploring these topics?
That's a great question. First and foremost, never stop asking questions. Curiosity is the fuel for learning. And don't be afraid to experiment. Try applying these concepts to different situations, even if they seem kind of unrelated at first. You might be surprised at the connections you uncover.
That's great advice. I'm definitely going to keep exploring and experimenting with these functions. I'm curious, are there any particular areas or applications that you find especially interesting?
Personally, I'm fascinated by how exponential and logarithmic functions are used in fields like biology and ecology to model like population growth or the spread of diseases or even just the dynamics of ecosystems. It's amazing how these math tools can help us understand the complex interactions of living organisms.
That sounds super interesting. I'm definitely going to have to explore those applications more. I'm already thinking about how I could use these functions to model the growth of bacteria in a petri dish, or even the spread of a virus through a population.
Those are great examples. And as you dive deeper into those areas, you'll find that exponential and logarithmic functions are really just the tip of the iceberg. There's a whole world of mathematical concepts out there just waiting to be explored, each with its own unique beauty and power.
This deep dive has been truly eye-opening. I feel like I've gained a whole new perspective on how the world works, and I can't wait to see what other mathematical adventures are out there.
And as you continue your exploration, remember to think critically about the information you encounter. Question those assumptions. Consider different perspectives and always try to connect the dots between seemingly different ideas. That's what true learning is all about.
Yeah, I love that idea of connecting the dots between different areas. It's like we're building this mental map of how the world works, and these functions are like key landmarks.
That's a great analogy. And the more we explore those connections, the more we realize how fundamental those math concepts are to understanding the universe.
Okay, before we wrap up this deep dive, I have one last question for you. You mentioned that exponential and logarithmic functions can be used to, analyze situations like population growth or the spread of diseases. Can you give me a specific example of how that works in practice?
Absolutely. Let's think about the spread of a contagious disease, right? In the very beginning, when only a few people are infected, that spread might follow an exponential growth pattern.
So it's like that snowball effect we talked about earlier.
Yes.
Each infected person infects more people, and the number of cases just grows really fast.
Exactly. But then, as more and more people get infected or become immune, that growth rate might start to slow down. And that's where those logarithmic functions come in.
How so? How do logarithms help us understand that slowing down of the spread?
Well, we can use logarithmic functions to model things like the time it takes for a certain percentage of the population to get infected. As that growth rate slows down, that time might increase. And we can use those logarithms to analyze that change.
Ah, I see. So those exponential functions describe that initial rapid spread, and then the logarithmic functions help us understand those later stages when things start to level off.
Precisely. And by combining those functions, we can create even more sophisticated models, ones that capture all those different phases of a disease outbreak.
That's incredible. I never realized how these math tools could be used to model something as complex as the spread of a disease. It's like we're using math to understand and even predict those real-world events.
That's the power of mathematical modeling. It allows us to take these abstract concepts and apply them to real situations. It gives us those insights and predictions that we wouldn't have otherwise.
This has been an awesome deep dive. I feel like I've learned so much about exponential and logarithmic functions and their properties and how they connect to the world around us.
Well, it's been a pleasure exploring these concepts with you. I always love to share those wonders of math.
You've definitely sparked my curiosity. I'm already thinking about all the different ways I can apply these concepts.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to really dive deeper into those applications you mentioned in biology and ecology.
I encourage you to do just that. Keep exploring. Keep questioning. Never stop learning. That's how we unlock the beauty and the power of math.
Thank you so much for this amazing deep dive. I feel like I've gained a whole new appreciation for these functions.
And thank you for sharing your curiosity and enthusiasm with me. It's been fun exploring these concepts together. And remember, that world of math is full of wonders just waiting to be discovered. So keep diving deep.